Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
How's it going, man?
I'm trying to make some adjustments, make a few changes in my life.
Can we figure out how to get a billion people to listen to this podcast?
I mean, we've had a couple million listen to it, so I guess we're a part of the way there, but I guess that's only a small portion of a B.
Adjust our strategy for full world domination.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we should talk about. Now, you know, this is the 34th part of our 52-part series about how to start a tech company. And we've gone through a lot of the parts about building the tech and getting to market. And, you know, we created this go-to-market strategy, and now we've sat back and looked at the results, and we got 2 million out of a billion. So like you said, we've got to make some adjustments. Now, before we get too far into making adjustments, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. That's an adjustment that a lot of people are being forced to make because the world is really short on software developers, and it's made the market pretty tough. But Fullscale will help you get it done quickly and affordably. All right, so marketing plans and adjustments in general. Like, where do we start?
Well, our last episode was about go-to-market strategies and stuff. We've been covering that. And I think for those of you who are listening to this episode, if you didn't listen to that episode, I would definitely go back and listen to we talk about different go-to-market strategies and traction channels and all that kind of stuff. But I think the key today, right, is once you pick one of those, you got to figure out if it works. And if it doesn't work, how do you adjust?
Yeah, you know, adjustments come in a lot of shapes and forms. I mean, that's literally like when I say, where do we start? Because it's that broad. I mean, it depends on the marketing plan you have in general. Sometimes the best adjustment that you can make to a marketing plan or campaign is legitimately just turning it off.
Well, and that's true. Sometimes you're just burning money, right? And
yeah.
You know, we always joked when I worked at Vin Solutions about car dealers, because everybody would go to a car dealer and tell them, like, you can buy my thing and you'll sell two more cars a month. And you can buy my thing and you'll sell more cars a month. And you'll buy my thing and you'll sell more cars a month. And we would always joke, was like, what if the car dealer did none of those, literally took the sign off the building? How many cars would they still sell?
Man, right? That's a good question. Cause I mean, on some levels there's a zillion things that'll market you. I mean,
everybody will promise you everything.
Yeah. Like, I'll give you an example. I owned a Ford truck in the past. I bought it from a Ford dealer, and I just Googled Ford dealers, and Google told me which one was closer to me. That didn't require anything. It didn't require any ads. I didn't see a newspaper. I didn't see any of that. You know, you talk about the changes in the full page newspaper ad was not required to get me in. But, you know, I mean, overall, I think when it comes to a marketing plan or strategy or any of that, if you ask when it needs adjusting or revising, maybe the answer is regularly.
That's kind of nonstop fine tuning, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's another thing too, is, you know, so ads go stale. I mean, things that worked 1 month begin to slow the next month. And, you know, I think it depends on your audience size. And, you know, so I don't know if there's a blanket answer for when does a marketing plan or strategy need adjusting or revising. It's usually not daily. You can drive yourself crazy doing that. So, I mean, next question is, how do we make adjustments?
Well, to follow up on your point, though, some of it is definitely seasonal or event-based, right? Like, oh, we're doing a bunch of marketing because it's Christmas or Black Friday or whatever, right? So, and another example, this is at Netreo. One of our competitors had a huge hacking thing go on. And so we did some different marketing around what happened to one of our competitors, right? And then eventually maybe that kind of wears off, right? And it's like, okay, now we got to figure out a different marketing message, right? Like, it's just kind of never ending. And some of it's just completely weird event-based or seasonal stuff too. It's not so much that the message isn't working. It's just like, it only worked for a certain amount of time because of other factors going on.
Well, and some of that too is also the size of people, that the size of the audience that you're advertising to. We talked about that in the last episode, yeah. You know, and using Full Scale as an example. So there was like something like 10,000 chief technology or chief information officers that have their job title showing on Facebook. That's a really small advertising size. So like, if you think about it, even if you were showing 1,000 impressions a day, 10 days later, maybe everybody's seen it. You're getting close to it. So how many times do people see it before it just kind of, I don't know. I see blind. A lot of that. Yeah. I see a lot of that on Facebook and LinkedIn. I'm like, wow, this ad again. Now here's the thing, is maybe that's what it takes in some of those cases, because maybe it's the eighth impression that finally gets the click and that's what they're looking for. But I mean, overall, that's usually not a good thing. So, you know, I noticed the same thing from anything from promoting this podcast to Full Scale to advertising for employees. The cost per click and the cost for conversion usually rises over time for that very reason.
Yeah, you get the low-hanging fruit, and then everybody else is kind of left, and you just keep hammering away at them, but they never respond.
Right. So one of the ways to make an adjustment is to move that same ad that was successful to one group and try it on different audience sizes. So I do that a lot actually with this podcast. So just kind of moving it around. There's a lot of very interesting built-in technology to really all social platforms at this point too, which lets you do things like create lookalike audiences or expand, like let their AI show ads to people or, you know, groups or whatever that are very similar to the people that have successfully clicked or follow you or do whatever. I mean, and sometimes adjustments are as simple as letting the very sophisticated AI at Google make some changes, but that can also run, that can also not go well too, you know? So I honestly find it to be very interesting, because I can start an ad, the same ad to the same audience. And if they're in different campaigns, like an A and B, like one of them will be hands down like twice as good as the other one. And I can't really explain why, because if it's a similar audience, like why is this one converting at such a high rate? And, you know, I mean, I think some of what you need to think about when it comes to making adjustments is also looking at like, what are we measuring?
Well, and the other challenge you have is, do you have enough data that it's even statistically relevant, right? You're like, oh, I did $100 worth of ads on Facebook and I got 3 clicks. Like, well, if you got 2 or 4, it's going to dramatically change your statistics, right? Like,
true.
It's not, there's not enough statistic relevance to it. And it might've been you testing the ad also.
Right.
So some of that is just really difficult, right? Like, and to your point earlier too, like you also run the ad for a week or two, and it's like, whoever was going to respond to the ad has already responded to it, and the other people just keep ignoring it. So some of that is just so difficult. But the one thing that you talk about a lot
in previous episodes, right, is it's all about test. It's A/B testing and continue to test things and figure out how to improve it. And that goes in your marketing message, but it also goes on things like our website, right? Like, oh, if we change this call to action or we change a different ads like on our site, different messaging. I mean, that's why you got people that spend like crazy amounts of money testing the color of buttons and crap like that. But that's only really relevant too when you've got an astronomical amount of traffic. Again, if you've only got 100 people that come to your website, it's so hard to statistically get relevance out of it.
Well, you know, we like to use real life examples. And recently I made some changes just to the full scale website and the full scale blog that just funneled people in a different way and just kind of pushed them towards the result that we wanted. And really in the end, when it comes to making adjustments, like, okay, so what's your goal? Is your goal, like if you're an online store, your goal is to make a sale. Right. If you are a SaaS platform, your goal is to get maybe to get people into a free trial. But none of it matters until you've created either a buyer of some sort. So, I mean, I think all of your adjustments should be centric around the buyer, you know, and if you're looking at other stuff and this, it's really easy to get off track with this. You know, people will get obsessed with likes or views or impressions, but really in the end, like unless you're like Eric Perkins from Startup Hustle TV, who literally gets paid for views and subscribes and stuff like that on YouTube, then none of that shit matters unless you're converting. So, you know, I mean, the conversions need to be the guide and it's the almighty dollar. And, you know, where you're creating it. And then, you know, another thing too, is I think as a business, Matt, talk a little bit about some of the crazy money that software startups put into getting and gaining customers and clients. Cause it's like when you look at it, it's like mind numbing and all of that. You're like, wow, like you're willing to pay that much for a user.
Well, and that's for sure one of the big differences here, right, is what does your company sell? Is it an enterprise sell that's a big ticket? Or are you selling something, you know, you're like Netflix and I get $10 a month and it's like, okay, I know my customer acquisition costs are so high, but I'm still sending out all these ads, you know, putting flyers in mailboxes. And when somebody signs up, it'll take like a year for us to actually be profitable on the customer, right? Because at Netflix, it was, you know, 10 bucks a month back then or whatever. But that's totally different if it's a large enterprise sale, right? If you're selling a product that's $100,000 a year, sure, your cost per click and lead gen costs and stuff like that can be a lot higher. And you're absolutely right about that. And then also with certain types of startups, it's a race to grab market share, right? Like when Uber came out, you know, they want to focus on being first to market before Lyft or somebody else gets to market, right? So they're willing to spend a lot more money just to get market share and buy market share at that point. And one of the things that was always funny to me at Stackify, we'd have competitors that would have like full-size billboard style ads, like in the airports. Like you'd get off the plane and there'd be a giant, you know, thing on the wall about AppDynamics or whatever. And it's like, this is a weird place to put an ad. Or New Relic actually had billboards along the highway in Silicon Valley. And so people do some interesting things. And sometimes it's just them trying to buy the market, right? They're trying to get market share because, yeah, customer acquisition may be cost or maybe high, but every time they sign up a new customer, their company's worth 50 times whatever the annual revenue was, right? So then they're going to go raise more money. And it's just like a VC shell game where customer acquisition costs don't matter because your revenue multiples are stupid. Like it's just kind of a whole different game that's outside of reality to me.
And it is outside reality. It feels like it, but there is something to be said about the being first to market. I'll give you an example. Yeah. I've never used Lyft. I used Uber like a long time ago and it's always treated me well. I've never really had a reason to use anything different. It's on my phone. It's got my card in it. Like, I just don't really care. It works. Yeah. Now on the flip side of that, like the food delivery thing, I finally, three apps later have fallen in love with DoorDash, you know, cause it's just, and now I get, and I won't throw the others under the bus, but you know, I had one that I ordered three different times and two of the three times I didn't even get my complete order.
Yeah.
you know, and so that wasn't working for me. So I moved down the line, you know, and so, it, I mean, I think that the question is how long is that user or that customer going to stay a customer?
Right.
You know, now in
lifetime value is a key component.
Right. And the theory of being first, I didn't ever see an Uber ad. I remember this was a long time ago and I was just, someone was like, hey, we'll take an Uber. I was like, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, and we did, I was like, oh, this is really cool. This is really neat. And then I ended up putting it on my phone like the next day and got a ride with it. And I was like, oh, this is cool. But so there's something to be said about the virality of being first and getting that out there. Cause in some things like, well, the Gigabook is a good example. So, you know, with Gigabook, you're using, our users are taking in, you know, taking appointments and doing other stuff, and you get notifications, reminders, and stuff like that from Gigabook. There's some internal advertising that occurs from the actual, right, the network effect. And, you know, that can be powerful too. So if you're trying to stir that up, I mean, who knows what the value is. Now, if you're selling a physical product, there's a lot of different things. So you see a lot of competition for like subscription boxes and stuff right. like that. That's a recurring sale that goes on over and over again. Now, long before I did any of this stuff that I did, I once sold pianos. And I've mentioned that before. That's like, for most people, a one-time purchase. Right. But it was a huge purchase. It was a big dollar. Like you buy a grand piano, it can be $50,000-$60,000. And the margins were good. And so, you know, we would sometimes spend a hell of a lot of money getting people in, but we had absolutely no expectation of return business, maybe a referral, but no one was coming. I mean, very rarely. Now, people would trade in an old piano they already had, but it wasn't that they had bought it from us because they'd had it.
They need
like
another one for their lake house and their, vacation house in Tahoe, right? Like
that's about it. Maybe. Well, those clients and customers are few and far between. Now, I did have one guy that that was a very well-known business founder when I was in Washington, D.C. that bought two grand pianos from us. He came in and used his black card and spent $75,000 and then came back a few months later and bought one for his girlfriend. And I was like, wow, okay. So that's how that goes. Now there's, you know, there's other things to be considered too. Like, so when I worked in the music industry and I used to work for Roland and they made, so I watched this metamorphosis from the brick and mortar store to the e-store come in and the advertising competition was so fierce because everyone sold the exact same thing. Like, you know, so there's sometimes a point of diminishing returns where you just simply have to look back and say, this isn't worth it. We're making no margin or we're losing money. And sometimes like, so, you know, I like watching these gold shows, like where they mine gold. I'm just so fascinated at how much effort they go through to fill like a jar with gold, you know, and like all the effort. Now they often refer to gold fever because people first see the gold and they get gold fever. They just want more, 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 more. And they're willing to just keep going and going and going. And the problem is they end up running out of money or they go broke because either they don't find the gold and it was really expensive or they overspend what they can get back. So you got to make sure, I think one of the things with making an adjustment to a marketing plan is asking yourself in some ways, do I have gold fever? Am I just obsessed with any of it? Cause eventually it all has to balance out unless you're the federal government, then you just keep spending.
Right.
But the rest of us either, you know, I mean, there's a lot to be said there. So, I mean, okay. So when you go to make an adjustment, do you just throw the baby out with the bathwater or like, is it a good idea to change the entire strategy or just part of it or?
Well, you definitely got to have something to baseline off, right? You're like, if you're doing content marketing, you're like, hey, this is what we've been doing. This is the results we're getting from it. And then being able to make changes and have something to compare back to, right? Like having some sort of baseline is important. Because you don't want to just randomly change crap all the time and you really don't know if it works or don't. You're like playing whack-a-mole and you have nothing to compare to.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you're going to throw out your whole plan, then it needs to be because the whole plan sucked. I don't have any problem with throwing out all the parts that don't work because you keep 20% of it that's highly effective. I think that's a good idea in a lot of cases, especially if you're trying to figure out what your traction channels were at all. You know, it's like, I mean, I don't know if that question has a definitive answer, but, and you know, Matt, you can think about that for a second while I remind you that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Now, we've settled in, like our marketing plan and our strategy for that is interesting. It's, you know, there's a bunch of people that seem to email me, contact me, message me regularly wanting to sell me web development services, which I kind of chuckle at. Sometimes if I'm grumpy, I'll just reply. I'm like, you know, I'm your competitor, right? But they're blanketing things out there. But, you know, like overall, there's a ton of competition for stuff. And we've taken a different route. And we believe, I mean, you and I and the other people that at the Full Scale organization, that the best way to provide value is exactly that, provide some kind of value. So creating content, it's like this podcast, you know, like we hope you get something beneficial out of listening. We hope you learn something. I mean, I talk to a lot of people that have listened to the show, and by the time that they're inquiring about Full Scale, they mention that they've listened to the show a lot. They feel like they know a lot about us or about the company. And, you know, that's that. I mean, sometimes the effective strategy isn't always around like, hey, let's buy ads. It's sometimes just doing something a little different or making some other improvements.
Well, it depends on what your traction channels are, right? To that example, it could be just referrals. It's like, we just keep doing what we're doing and we just get referrals. And you mentioned earlier about throwing the whole plan out the window. And we actually did that at Stackify at one point in time. Like in the early days, we were trying to do pay-per-click and stuff and banner ads. Like we were running banner ads on Stack Overflow, and which is a big developer site, and Google and stuff. And I want to say we were spending like $30,000-$50,000 a month on ads, and we're not getting a lot out of it. And we literally just stopped doing all of it. And that's where we decided to focus on content marketing. And then we built a free tool that we gave away that was a lead generator. And we just totally changed, like totally pivoted our entire go-to-market strategy. And then even with our content marketing, you know, it's one of those things we kind of did for a while. And then I would always look at it and I'm like, man, we randomly wrote this blog post like 3 years ago that people sign up as like customers, like every week from this thing. Maybe we should do more of that. Like, how do we improve that? Right. Like, that's the thing, is sometimes you dabble with some things and figure out what works and what doesn't.
But once again, it's about the conversion and seeing where it's at. By the way, when I first met you, the very first time I ever sat down with you, you were telling me about how you wanted to break your addiction to CPC ads. And you were telling me that you were spending 30 to 50 grand a month on, I mean, everything from Twitter to, like you said, Stack Overflow. Yeah. And you were explaining to me that you thought that maybe content and blog marketing, and I had a bit of a history with that myself, and we had a conversation about it. Now, one thing I will tell you, and for those of you listening, CPC ads, I often compare to crack. Because yeah, they get you high really fast. You'll find yourself broke and wanting more later. And, you know, that's the thing, is with some types of advertising, I think it's also important when you go to pivot or change your plan. So Matt, when you pivoted from spending 40, 50 grand a month on CPC ads and then created what we refer to as evergreen content, that was more of an investment than an expense. Yeah. So
long-term play.
Yeah. And I think that that's an important part when you look at there's a time for each of that. Like, you know, those kind of plays are difficult. They take a long time. You have to create the content. You have to publish it. It has to get picked up. Your site gains authority, like a whole lot of stuff. It's not a quick fix. It's not the crack of marketing. No. It's more like the 12-year whiskey or something like that. Is that the 5-year bourbon?
Like, and Full Scale's blog gets quite a bit of traffic, and it's up 50% over the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Which is a lot, right? And it's kind of like you get a snowball effect, right? Like it just slowly picks up more and more momentum and it starts to really go. But yeah, you're absolutely right. When you first start, like, you start throwing a lot of stuff on the wall, and it's easy to get disheartened because you're not getting a lot of instant success from it. No different than starting a podcast or a YouTube channel. Sure. Or anything else, right? Yeah. In content, a lot of times you got to build up the reputation, and for blogging and stuff. It's a reputation with Google.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned being up 50% over 6 months. So let's say that we were getting 30,000 visits a month. That means that literally we would just be adding up like something like 2,500 visits a month. It doesn't feel, yeah. It doesn't feel super sexy. It, you know, like when you look at 30 days, you're like, oh, wow. So we went from 20,000 to 22,000. But once again, all those visits don't mean shit unless they're converting into something. So exactly. some of that now with that in the last couple months, we just recently over the last 2 months have seen our inbound lead volume triple. And it doesn't have anything to do with the traffic. The traffic's slightly helpful, but it wasn't triple worthy. The right. adjustments that we made were more about, so this is a thing that people will say a lot. They'll say, well, I tried CPC ads and I got 300 clicks and no one bought anything. And I'm sitting here thinking, it's not the ad's fault, it's your fault, right? It's about what happens when after someone clicks. So in our case with the blog, we just needed to have we were trying to do a better job of getting people to a point where they were onboarding into the management platform we've built at Fullscale for our clients. And that platform, and we did that through just some simple, like, you know, just better calls to action, trying different things. Also doing stuff like we at one point were collecting leads so we could then turn around and email those people and ask them to do the same thing we now ask them to just do right on the site.
Yeah.
So removing steps from the buying process and the conversion process, I think is a marketing adjustment. Technically it's a sales and marketing adjustment, but part of your marketing is the experience that comes after the click. And I got to tell you what, man, there are some people that have brilliant advertising and like ungodly terrible user experience or landing page after that. You know, it's like you go to you get the click and you just go to, it's like a page with a contact form.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this is the best you could do
somewhere.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say versus I'm watching TikTok and I see some cool ad for something and I click on it and then somehow or another, because I bought something in the past, it like automatically knows who I am and has all my information and my credit card. And it's like one more click and I bought something. That's bad. It's good for them.
It's good for them, but bad for you. I mean, Amazon's whole economy is like that. You know, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like, we actually talked about that because I was talking to Startup Hustle TV cast member, and go to YouTube and type in Startup Hustle and you can watch the videos we've put out. But Eric Perkins wanted to sell more merch and we talked about it and we were like, dude, you should just put it on Amazon and that's where we'll direct people to, because that way you don't have to fulfill anything.
Yeah.
And like everybody has an Amazon account. Like if you're out there and you're in the United States and you still just don't even have an Amazon account, I'm not even sure I want your sale.
My mom is like the least technical person you'll ever meet. And she knows how to order groceries online and use Amazon now, which is terrifying. Like it finally, that wave of technology innovation finally got there like 20 years later.
Yeah. When I think about my dad, I'm like, this could be good and it could also be really bad, you know, like, because I don't know if people that old are immune to the, you know, it's like gold fever. It's like buying fever. It's like you're one click away. Can you control it? So, yeah. Okay. So, all right. So some other things when it comes to the adjustments, like, I mean, if you're going to implement stuff, I mean, I think that, you know, I think one of the things with the plan you can look at is like, well, did you actually follow the plan?
And give it enough time to be successful.
Sure.
Right.
I mean, I think that's what you establish up front. You know, some of it, like, now look, if you, there's no nobility in saying, hey, I'm going to give this 90 days. And you realize a week into it, you're like, oh my God, I'm paying five times more a click than I can afford. I'd probably turn that off.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I turn that off, but maybe not an hour later. So when it comes to, you know, like I think some of the things is you look at the plan. Did you stick with the plan? Ask yourself why. I think that more and more, and you know, we were just talking about this, but more and more, the more steps that you have on anything, the less result you're going to get. You know, well, now that's not always a bad thing, though.
Well, I think you also have to come to the realism, and I don't know if this is just a rule I follow or if it's really an industry rule, but I feel like half of your marketing budget is always completely wasted and you just don't know which half. And that's just the way it works.
Right? That's just
the law of marketing. Half of it is complete waste, but you don't know which half.
I think it was Simon Sinek's Start With Why. I was listening to the audiobook driving down to the office. And I think he was saying that. He said, it's pretty much known that half your marketing budget is ineffective, but knowing which half is the real key.
And it's like the car dealers. When you used to work with car dealers, right? They would spend an insane amount of money on newspaper ads, advertising in like Auto Trader magazine, like the old magazines, and radio ads and TV ads. Who the hell knows which ones of those worked, right? There's no tracking. There's no way to know if it's a TV ad or a radio ad or the news. You don't know. Like, that's not like you have click tracking and stuff like that, right?
Yep.
And so, you just know you're throwing away a lot of money somewhere. You just don't know which one, but you're scared to change any of it if it just somehow works.
Yeah, I've been in that boat before, and you know, that's the thing though. You should ask if you're not already asking. I mean, if it's an online thing, like, I mean, there's ways to convert and track, and then there's just good old fashioned asking. And that, you know, it was actually, you know, me asking incoming leads on, you know, for Full Scale, you know, because we do ask them when they fill out a form, how'd you hear about us? And they often say, you know, search engine. They often say Startup Hustle podcast. And then one thing, because I asked, I started noticing was that we were getting a lot of incoming leads that were coming directly from people that had worked at companies that had used Full Scale and were now going to another company.
Yes.
And it's like a completely different type of referral. Yeah, you know, see if you like figure out how to that
scale
was
that marketing channel.
I was thinking, I was already thinking about it. You know, I was like, wow, do I have
how
to
do I
like
get all sh- our customers should fired from their current job so they have to go somewhere?
Or you have to look for job changes in people that work at company. Yeah, it's like, yeah. I don't know where to start with that.
And like, that was a great thing for us at Venn Solutions back then, because who the hell works at the same car dealership for more than like 6 months, right? And so they were everywhere. So that was huge for us then. But in at Stackify, we saw that too, right? I ran that business for 9 years, and we definitely saw over the time you people leave and they take you with you. And that's a great testament to your product and service too, right? If they take you everywhere they go.
So I think this is worth talking about. If we're going to talk about making marketing adjustments, I think, you know, how do you determine who makes the call?
Whoever writes the check, I guess.
I mean, maybe. I mean, on some of it, and it depends how big your company is, but like, I mean, have you clarified and defined like what is an acceptable result? Because I think if you leave these decisions to the wrong people, you could very easily be grossly overspending.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or probably pretty easily kill things that are working.
Well, and for sure, if you're like, hey, Mr. Marketing dude, you got 50 grand a month, figure it out. Right. And then like, he has no idea what he's doing.
That's pretty much the worst way to approach the plan, isn't it?
That's probably the way it goes in most corporate places, though.
So what's the right? So in a world of tech companies, and we're talking about starting new ones, you know, how do you break into a market where there's already a bunch of competition?
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to stick out, right? You're in that red ocean where there's blood everywhere. Everybody's fighting for the same food. And
the red ocean? Is that referred to as the red ocean?
Yeah, you want to be in the blue ocean, right? Where there's nobody else there but you. You're just floating along.
Episode 12, be a coward, right?
Yeah.
Is that what Lyril Holt told us? Now, we're going to take Lyril as credible because he sold one of the largest franchise chains of anyone I've ever met. But, you know, he said that his approach to building businesses and marketing is to be cowardly, meaning like going somewhere where he'll be left alone to get to do something no one else is doing and get really good at it. And I mean, I think that that's something when you talk about marketing adjustments is like, so I didn't at Full Scale when it came to the Startup Hustle podcast and also when it came to like our content marketing, the evergreen effect. Okay, so if we have to advertise for what we do, for those of you listening, this is real. Sometimes the clicks can be like $20, $30,
$40. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Think about and, like in your old days, right, in the ticket business, like what does it cost per click to sell a Super Bowl ticket?
A lot.
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah.
One of the biggest ones is actually college. Colleges pay an absurd amount of money because, you know, you're going to pay like $200,000 in debt for that education. Good luck with that. Yeah, they'll pay a ton of money for leads. Some of them
That's probably part of the reason it's $50,000 a year to go to college because they need to spend 20% of that to get the next batch of students in.
Some of it's absurd.
Yeah, so I mean, really, in the end, I think it comes down to if you don't understand the basics of your business, then you can't really begin to describe what an acceptable result is. But Matt, that's super hard for a brand new company. Cause like we went through this with Gigabook years ago when we were doing some of the ads, like, so what percentage of it? Okay. So how much is an average account worth? How long do they stick around? How many months do they need to be subscribers before you break even? One of the things with software that we kind of arrived at as a decent number was, and this sounds crazy, but you should have for every conversion you get to a paid user, kind of the C grade was like 10 to 12 months. Like 10 to 12 months of subscriptions for an average account should cover the cost of that user.
Right.
So if you got it back in 5 or 6 months, then that was like an A. And if it took more than that, that might've been like a D or an F. Like what are some, have you had discussions with other tech founders that have revealed some of that?
You know, I don't remember what all those industry standards were, but I think what you just said was about right. And for what's common. And yeah, it's, you know, you have to think about what are your customer acquisition costs. You have to think about what is the lifetime value of the customer too, right? And then what is that, you know, payback, you know, break even period, right? Like you just described.
Yeah, and that's going to be different. And then also like there are certain things, certain types of software that are super sticky. Super sticky because, you know, it depends on who you're selling to. Like if you're a straight up B2B software platform that has enterprise users, like for example, I used to manage a chain of retail stores a very long time ago. And I think the most we had a terrible point of sale system, but we would literally talk in our meetings that the amount of effort, energy, time, and fuck ups that would exist with trying to swap that out across 80 stores in 8 different states would have been like, was it even worth it? And that goes back to your whole point is if you have a new product, if it's not 3 times cheaper or 3 times better, you're going to have a very difficult time getting people to even adopt to it.
Yeah. Especially if it's hard to switch. And you're absolutely right. Like the last thing anybody ever wants to change is like a point of sale, an accounting system, a phone system, like HR system, payroll. Like I don't care if I can save $100 a month. Like there's like 100 nightmare headaches with this bullshit. Why would I do this? Right. And yeah, especially if you're trying to compete in any of those things, forget it. But if you can build a product that has that kind of stickiness to it, oh man, the lifetime value of a customer is so good.
You know, speaking of sticky products, I finally got the last item out of the storage locker from the Gigabook office I had almost 4 years ago.
Did you find any gold in there too?
No, but actually I found a silver dollar.
I'll take
it. But that didn't make up for like the $8,000 that I paid. You talk about stickiness though, but that's the thing. It's like, and it was kind of fun. So I couldn't move all my stuff. I didn't have enough when it was when I moved into the office at Stackify, and we had just a little bit of extra stuff, and the easiest thing to do, cause I was selling my building and I needed to be out of it. And I told myself I was always a month away from cleaning that thing out. Now that said, you know, that, by the way, I just saw a storage unit placed by my house. There was no sophisticated advertising. There was no cost per click. There was no radio ad. There was literally a sign on the street, and it was a proximity thing. And that's back to, like you said, about the car dealer stuff. Like, are you going to sell two more cars? And would you have maybe sold this anyway? Cause some things just in this day and age don't require a hell of a lot of marketing.
I can tell you in a physical presence business like that, you know what the number one thing is that sells? It's those things at car dealers that they go up in the air and they float around and they wiggle and shake.
Oh, the wavy arm guy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the number one thing. Just get like three of those. That's it. That's all you need. And a bigger sign, maybe. That's it.
That wouldn't work for a tech company, I don't think. Maybe in San Francisco, like you said. And I noticed the same thing. There's like billboards just on the highway end from the airport. And like, you're like, you're like, wow,
or Salesforce, that's pretty, or Slack, or like stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to Silicon Valley.
Now, I mean, some of those things can afford it though. I mean, that's you talk about, like, are you advertising to people that are going to be your client for 10 years? It was funny because you mentioned Slack. It had an outage yesterday, and I even made a post in Startup Hustle Chat that said, I pointed out Slack was broken, and I realized like how dependent I was on it. And I was asking the group what they were dependent on. I got really interesting answers like electricity,
running water,
the internet, like, thanks God, air, you know, like when I have no oxygen, it is difficult for me to run my business. So,
coffee.
Yeah. So that now those are legit. Those are legit. I can buy that, but I mean, come on. Yes. Without electricity, unless you're running like a rafting company, you know, like down like the Whitewater Rapids or horseback riding.
Speaking of Slack, yesterday my wife asked me, she was on Facebook. I don't know what the hell she was looking at, but she saw this thing come up about Slack, about somebody was like hiding messages in Slack or something. I don't know. She's like, have you ever used this Slack thing before? And I'm like, all day long.
All day. All day. Yeah.
I was like, what kind of crazy conspiracy thing did you just find about Slack? And now you're asking me if I use it. I'm like, I live on Slack all day long. Like, it's like air and water and electricity to me.
True, true. All right. Well, we're here at the end of yet another installment of our How to Start a Tech Company. Today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io. Let us help you build that team you want quickly and affordably. Just go to fullscale.io. It's really easy. Give us a little bit of info. We'll take a look at it, and we will reply with a lot of info, suggestions, and hopefully future teammates that can help you build your tech company. So, Matt, what are some of your takeaways from today?
I think, you know, as we talked about in previous episodes about go-to-market strategies and stuff, I think as a company, you always have to be kind of, you know, thinking about other marketing strategies and what works. It could be totally different channels, but always, you know, even if you're just like, oh, we do online advertising, like display and Google and Twitter and Facebook and all these things. I think it's just, you know, kind of slow and steady, test things, right? Like, don't take 100% of your budget and all of a sudden jump from one thing to the next. Like, you know, throw a few dollars at some things. See if it works. I mean, you may not get enough scientific data if, you know, if it's a real small fraction of your budget, but, you know, test the waters, right, before you go all in. I think that's my key suggestion. And at the end of the day, you want to try and find as many kind of different channels as you can and not be totally dependent on one of them. So diversification is good.
I think my biggest takeaway is you probably just need those wavy arm.
Yes.
Air fan guys, you know, like that kind of, they raise up and they fall down and they raise up and they fall down.
They work great.
And full page newspaper ads, because how could you go wrong? You know, I mean, in the end, I think that really when it comes to adjustments, I just think you got to keep your finger on the pulse of what you're doing. I mean, things that, you know, I've just after decades of owning, managing, and doing business, like, you know, I think that the kiss of death is expecting something that works now to always work. You know, there's always going to make adjustments. You know, while I'm not a New England Patriots fan, I do admire the success that their coach has had. And, you know, he says, if you wait till halftime before you start making adjustments, yeah, then you've waited too long. And, you know, there's and it really, when it comes to marketing and marketing plans and all of it, I mean, it is amazing how quickly you can run through a ton of cash from not paying attention.
Yep, absolutely.
So pay attention. I think that's the key. Pay attention to the wavy arm fan guy and your results. And if you get both of them and they're both working, then you're in a really great place. So I think that's a good place to stop, man. You're going to go buy. That's why we have to end this episode, because Matt Watson has to go buy a wavy arm fan guy. They're probably like $300. You can lease them. I've leased them for piano sales like 50 years ago.
I found it. It's $50.
You need a good one. The good ones are more than $50. You need one that's at least like, that's a little more like it. Or they're like 30.
Waving inflatable tube guy. That's the
type. How tall is it?
Ooh, 20 feet.
It's not tall enough. You need to be at least twice that.
Okay.
If you get it for every 10 feet you add, I guarantee you, you're going to sell 2 more cars this month. I'm out of here.
All right. See ya.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.